Gracias.
Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. Our 30-minute program is designed for English learners. On today's show, the programs American Stories and Ask a Teacher. But first, the Dwight D. Eisenhower Memorial is now open to the public following a dedication service Thursday in Washington, D.C. A combination of structures and statues honors America's top World War II general and former president. The newest memorial in the nation's capital was more than 20 years in creation, from congressional approval to dedication. The opening ceremony had been planned for May to mark the 75th anniversary of the defeat of Germany in World War II. But the coronavirus health crisis forced organizers to postpone the event until September 17th. The U.S. Marine Band, also known as the President's Own, started the celebration. Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas heads the commission that led the building project. At the ceremony, he thanked the long list of supporters for the memorial, including the Eisenhower family. Then he introduced a special guest speaker from very, very far away.
Good evening, Senator Roberts and honored guests. I'm NASA astronaut Chris Cassidy, commander of the International Space Station, orbiting 260 miles above Earth. Along with our NASA administrator, I'm honored to join you in celebrating the memorial dedication of our nation's 34th president, Dwight D. Eisenhower.
To most Americans, Eisenhower was known simply by his nickname, Ike. Eisenhower was born in Texas in 1890. But he grew up in Abilene, Kansas. After high school, he attended the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and became an officer in the U.S. Army. In World War II, Eisenhower received increasingly important positions. He led the Allied invasions of North Africa, then Italy, then finally Normandy, France, as a five-star general and supreme Allied commander. After the war, Eisenhower showed interest in running for president. He chose Richard Nixon as his running mate, and the two were elected in 1952. Gaining the presidency was among the pivotal moments recognized by the Memorials Commission as central to Eisenhower's life and legacy. He took office while the country was involved in a war on the Korean Peninsula. In addition, the United States increasingly faced competition from the former Soviet Union, which sought to expand its economic and military influence in Europe and Asia. The general then president would face an unusually wide set of issues at home and abroad during his two terms, which continue to define and trouble America.
One of Eisenhower's first tasks was to end the conflict in Korea. In that war, North Korea, with ally China and support from the Soviet Union, fought against South Korea and United Nations troops from several countries, led by the United States. On July 27, the United States signed the Korean Armistice Agreement, bringing fighting to an end. The peace deal marked the end of a hot war in what would change into a cold war with the Soviet Union. The Cold War was a period of intense competition between the communist USSR and its allies and the democratic capitalist West, led by the U.S.
Another issue important to Eisenhower's presidency was civil rights. He appointed Earl Warren, who was the Supreme Court Chief Justice, who gave the Brown v. Board of Education ruling that desegregated public schools. Eisenhower ordered federal troops to enforce U.S. law to integrate the Central High School of Little Rock, Arkansas, in 1957. During Eisenhower's term, activist Rosa Parks pushed for integration of busing in Alabama, and Martin Luther King Jr. began to lead peaceful protests in the American South. Eisenhower's efforts to push space exploration form a third part of his legacy. The Soviet Union was first to launch a satellite into orbit in 1957. However, Eisenhower created the U.S. space agency NASA and supported science education as an answer to the space race. By 1959, NASA had introduced 7 astronauts and the American space program was fully established. And during his time in office, Ike was and largely remains one of America's most popular and well-liked presidents.
The long road to completion of the memorial was partly caused by disagreements between Eisenhower's family and memorial designer Frank Gehry. The family did not accept Gehry's first design, which had at its center a statue of Eisenhower as a shoeless boy. The disagreement over the design grew severe, involved Congress and legal action, and delayed progress on the project for many years. The cost of the project rose to about $150 million. The final design places importance on Eisenhower's 2 main roles in history: his leadership of the D-Day invasion of Normandy and his time as president. A statue of a young Ike remains. Behind is a wide metal structure which memorializes the beaches of Normandy, where D-Day took place. At the ceremony, Gehry spoke in video message. He praised the debate over the memorial design.
There were sensitivities for sure expressed by many, including the Eisenhower family. We listened to all, and the result is better.
The memorial rests on land next to the Department of Education, across Independence Avenue from the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, and beside the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
South Sudanese peace activist Rita Martin Lopidia Abraham received the 2020 Women Building Peace Award this week. The award comes from the United States Institute of Peace, a group set up by Congress. The Institute works in support of conflict resolution and prevention worldwide. Abraham leads a not-for-profit group called EVE. The organization was formed in 1996. It works to empower women in South Sudan. Abraham says her struggle for peace in her country has been difficult. She told VOA she has faced countless threats, even some from men taking part in negotiations. Sometimes when you talk to the parties and you speak truth to power, people seem to misunderstand you, she said. This is very sad because at the end of the day, the purpose is for peace. But with the warring parties in South Sudan, it's not always the case. The activist will receive $10,000 and be recognized by the Institute during a celebration next year. Abraham said she will use part of the money to educate more women in South Sudan about their rights. I am so passionate about young women, she said. She hopes to invest some of the prize money in a young women's leadership project that EVE operates. Abraham noted that she has always had a desire to support orphans. Part of the award will go towards helping orphans and street children in the South Sudan capital, Juba, she said. Abraham has served as a delegate at the South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa and Khartoum. In 2018, she signed a peace agreement in the Ethiopian capital on behalf of the South Sudan Women Coalition for Peace. The coalition includes 50 women's organizations in South Sudan and other countries. Abraham said the leaders of South Sudan have been slow to enact important parts of the peace agreement. I am as disappointed as other Sudanese, she said, adding that the agreement has been reduced to power sharing. People are only paying attention to what positions they can get. Abraham said the opposing sides are not talking about the second part of the agreement. It requires standards for security enforcement in Juba and other areas. She noted that issues in the first part of the agreement have yet to be resolved. We still have challenges in the formations of the legislature, state governments, she said. And there are still people who have not been replaced in the states. This is a big challenge, Abraham said. I'm Alice Bryant.
Today, we answer a question from Taro. Taro writes, how are way and path different? Could you explain these more to me? Dear Taro, thank you for writing to us. Both words have more than one meaning. After we consider the meaning of each one, we will look at what the two words have in common. I hope it helps.
The word way can mean how someone behaves, appears, or feels. Here is an example of how to use it in a sentence.
She just wants to do it her way and not her mother's way.
Way can also mean a method or system for doing something. For example,
the easiest way to do this is to leave plenty of time for everything. A path can be a narrow clearing or markings left in the ground from the movement of people or animals. Some paths are created for people to walk or ride on, such as a bike path. Here is an example.
The bike path led to the beach.
A path can also mean a series of actions leading to a result or even a way of living.
She did not enjoy medicine, so she chose a different career path. Now let me tell you how the words way and path are similar. Both words can describe the area in front of someone or something that is moving. Here are two examples.
A tree had fallen and was blocking our way. The fire destroyed everything in its path.
Path and way are also similar when they are describing a road or something that people use to move from one place to another. However, there are some differences between the two words. One difference is that way can describe more than one connected road or path. But we use path to describe just one singular road or route. An example of this is,
can you tell me the way to the beach? Using way here could show that the route has more than one path, but combined they are one way. So if you ask,
which path do I take to get to the old forest? You probably mean there is one path to get there. I hope that helps to answer your question, Taro. And that's Ask a Teacher.
What questions do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Gregory Stockel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, our program, American Stories. Today we hear part one of Rappaccini's Daughter by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Many years ago, a young man named Giovanni Guasconti left his home in Naples to study in northern Italy. He rented a small room on the top floor of a dark and ancient palace. Long ago, the building had belonged to a noble family. Now, an old woman, Signora Lisabetta, rented its rooms to students at the University of Padua. Giovanni's room had a small window. From it, he could see a large garden that had many plants and flowers. "Does the garden belong to you?" he asked Signora Lisabetta one day. "Oh, no," she said quickly. "That garden belongs to the famous doctor, Giacomo Rappaccini. People say he uses those plants to make strange kinds of medicine. He lives in that small brown house in the garden with his daughter, Beatrice." Giovanni often sat by his window to look at the garden. He had never seen so many different kinds of plants. They all had enormous green leaves and magnificent flowers in every color of the rainbow. Giovanni's favorite plant was in a white marble vase near the house. It was covered with big purple flowers. One day, while Giovanni was looking out his window, he saw an old man in a black cape walking in the garden. The old man was tall and thin. His face was an unhealthy yellow color. His black eyes were very cold. The old man wore thick gloves on his hands and a mask over his mouth and nose. He walked carefully among the plants, as if he were walking among wild animals or poisonous snakes. although he looked at the flowers very closely, he did not touch or smell any of them. When the old man arrived at the plant with the big purple flowers, he stopped. He took off his mask and called loudly, "Beatrice, come help me."
"I am coming, Father. What do you want?" answered a warm young voice from inside the house. A young woman came into the garden. Her thick, dark hair fell around her shoulders in curls. Her cheeks were pink, and her eyes were large and black. She seemed full of life, health, and energy as she walked among the plants. Giovanni thought she was as beautiful as the purple flowers in the marble vase. The old man said something to her. She nodded her head as she touched and smelled the flowers that her father had been so careful to avoid. Several weeks later, Giovanni went to visit Pietro Baglioni, a friend of his father's. Professor Baglioni taught medicine at the university. During the visit, Giovanni asked about Dr. Rappaccini. "He is a great scientist," Professor Baglioni replied, "but he is also a dangerous man." "Why?" asked Giovanni. The older man shook his head slowly. "Because Rappaccini cares more about science than he does about people. He has created many terrible poisons from the plants in his garden. He thinks he can cure sickness with these poisons. It is true that several times he has cured a very sick person that everyone thought would die. But Rappaccini's medicine has also killed many people. I think he would sacrifice any life, even his own, for one of his experiments."
"But what about his daughter?" Giovanni said. "I'm sure he loves her." The old professor smiled at the young man. "So," he said, "you have heard about Beatrice Rappaccini. People say she is very beautiful. But few men in Padua have ever seen her. She never leaves her father's garden." Giovanni left Professor Baglioni's house as the sun was setting. On his way home, he stopped at a flower shop where he bought some fresh flowers. He returned to his room and sat by the window. Very little sunlight was left. The garden was quiet. The purple flowers on Giovanni's favorite plant seemed to glow in the evening's fading light. Then someone came out of the doorway of the little brown house. It was Beatrice. She entered the garden and walked among the plants. She bent to touch the leaves of a plant or to smell a flower. Rappaccini's daughter seemed to grow more beautiful with each step. When she reached the purple plant, she buried her face in its flowers. Giovanni heard her say, "Give me your breath, my sister. The ordinary air makes me weak. And give me one of your beautiful flowers." Beatrice gently broke off one of the largest flowers. As she lifted it to put it in her dark hair, a few drops of liquid from the flower fell to the ground. One of the drops landed on the head of a tiny lizard crawling near the feet of Beatrice. For a moment, the small animal twisted violently. Then it moved no more. Beatrice did not seem surprised. She sighed and placed the flower in her hair. Giovanni leaned out of the window so he could see her better. At this moment, a beautiful butterfly flew over the garden wall. It seemed to be attracted by Beatrice and flew once around her head. Then, the insect's bright wings stopped and it fell to the ground dead. Beatrice shook her head sadly. Suddenly, she looked up at Giovanni's window. She saw the young man looking at her. Giovanni picked up the flowers he had bought and threw them down to her. "Young lady," he said, "wear these flowers as a gift from Giovanni Guasconti." "Thank you," Beatrice answered. She picked up the flowers from the ground and quickly ran to the house. She stopped at the door for a moment to wave shyly at Giovanni. It seemed to him that his flowers were beginning to turn brown in her hands. For many days, the young man stayed away from the window that looked out on Rappaccini's garden. He wished he had not talked to Beatrice, because now he felt under the power of her beauty. He was a little afraid of her, too. He could not forget how the little lizard and the butterfly had died. One day, while he was returning home from his classes, he met Professor Baglioni on the street. "Well, Giovanni," the old man said, "have you forgotten me?" Then he looked closely at the young man. "What is wrong, my friend? Your appearance has changed since the last time we met." It was true. Giovanni had become very thin. His face was white, and his eyes seemed to burn with fever. As they stood talking, a man dressed in a long black cape came down the street. He moved slowly, like a person in poor health. His face was yellow, but his eyes were sharp and black. It was the man Giovanni had seen in the garden. As he passed them, the old man nodded coldly to Professor Baglioni, but he looked at Giovanni with a great deal of interest. "It's Dr. Rappaccini," Professor Baglioni whispered after the old man had passed them. "Has he ever seen your face before?" Giovanni shook his head. "No," he answered. "I don't think so." Professor Baglioni looked worried. "I think he has seen you before. I know that cold look of his. He looks the same way when he examines an animal he has killed in one of his experiments. Giovanni, I will bet my life on it. You are the subject of one of Rappaccini's experiments." Giovanni stepped away from the old man. "You are joking," he said. "No, I'm serious." The professor took Giovanni's arm. "Be careful, my young friend. You are in great danger." Giovanni pulled his arm away. "I must be going," he said. "Good night." As Giovanni hurried to his room, he felt confused and a little frightened. Signora Lisabetta was waiting for him outside his door. She knew he was interested in Beatrice. "I have good news for you," she said. "I know where there is a secret entrance into Rappaccini's garden." Giovanni could not believe his ears. "Where is it?" he asked. "Show me the way."
And that is our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver.